As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I knew we was gonna beat them clowns.
Oh well.
Hashtag fate.
Shall we begin?
Wow, wasn't that fun?
You're breaking up, Bob.
And he's...
Paul Allen.
Take care, Polly Wally.
Loserville sounds better in FM. Vikings, 9 to noon.
Irv Smith in motion. Cousins goes play action from under center. He'll whip one over the middle, intercepted immediately. First pass picked off Deion Jones. Deion Jones turns up to the 40 near side to the 35, and he's out of bounds at about the 27-yard line. Eighth interception this season for Cousins on the first play of the game. 3rd and 11 from the Vikings 20. There's the max snap. Ryan steps up in the pocket, goes to the end zone, man wide open, caught. It is Julio Jones for an Atlanta Falcons touchdown. Cousins pick. Falcons roll down the field. Winless team takes a 6-0 lead. 4th and goal. Handoff goes to Boone. Falcons snipped it out, and they stopped the Vikings on 4th and goal from the 1. I mean, there was a member of the Birds in the backfield by the time Boone took the snap. The Falcons just got a goal line stand. Atlanta rushes for Hurk with a straight drop. Passes intercepted at the 41. The second pick thrown by Kirk Cousins today. And the Falcons have the ball once again in Minnesota Vikings territory. Blair Wright caught Ridley's speech into the end zone. Touchdown, Atlanta Falcons. 8-yard touchdown for Calvin Ridley. His 5th this season. First in nearly a month. And the winless Falcons lead the Minnesota Vikings 16-0.
The sky is falling, no early warning.
Oh no!
There's no returning, it's the end of love.
No!
The sky is falling, no early.
So that would be an L for today.
No returning, the sky is falling.
Cousins, straight drop, ball skip, 3rd pick. It is an interception by the Atlanta Falcons. Headed up the field is Oluwakon, center of the field. Ryan steps up, looking to run left on 4th down. Now he backs up, loops it, caught Julio at the 25, 20, 15. And Julio Jones gets into the end zone, touchdown. Ryan from under center, passes left, uncovered Hayden Hurst, 20, 15, 10. Touchdown, Atlanta Falcons. On 4th and 1, Matt looked right. All of Minnesota went that way. Hurst, sole alone on the other side of the field. And that's ridiculous.
The sky is falling.
Oh, well.
There's no returning.
Vikings.
The sky is falling.
Put me in a good mood today.
Oh well.
There's no return, yeah.
Oh,
no! Oh, yeah.
Hashtag faith.
There's no return, yeah.
About time my back on the feeling.
Yo, what's up now? It's a Monday in the neighborhood. It is 9 to noon at 9:04. Good morning. Master mixer of that Monday Sky is Falling montage is Eric Nordquist. He is the 9 to noon mad producer, and I'm Paul Allen from the Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios at FM 100.3 KFAN. What's going on?
Vent with Vox.
Got to get after it right away. There will be emergency Rubrant phone calls this segment, so be on alert. Your phone is the hot route. The play call is 800-320-5326. That's the play call. 800-320-5326. Ready? Be on alert. Stand by. Because more losing is coming. Man, it's hot up in here right now with this Minnesota Vikings football team. I could hear it in the voices on Fanline, and I could hear it with the voices on Overtime following Fanline, and I could hear it in the voices with post-game press conferences with those in the battle. Many are comfortable sitting on top of the hill, watching the battle, waiting for it to conclude, and then coming down and shooting the wounded. That's the mindset right now by many, but that's okay, because that means you care. But it's obviously bad. Opinions are hot with Fanline, Overtime, and kind of some emails, because it's like interaction, or, you know, you're sharing thought, but you're like not talking or seeing each other, and you can't really feel... You just can't really feel how saddened or angst-riddled or troubled somebody is by something happening with a sports team that happens to be a big diversion for them. It makes it easier for me when I can see them or I can hear them, as opposed to just guessing what's happening by, like, reading something. So with the postgame, beginning with Zimmer and Coleman, through Fanline, through the kids on Overtime. Oh, you could hear it and or feel it in voices, and it obviously is bad right now. I mean, like, an email came in 45 seconds ago to booth@kfan.com, Bradshaw and Brian inbox, John Kay and Woodbury, quote, pissed off, the Vikings got embarrassed, but at least the Packers got killed. I'm like, bad take, Johnny Kay. Can't channel emotions that way when your covenant's only win required the Calvin Johnson rule to get to the winner's circle. So it has nothing to do with anybody else. It has everything to do with our covenant. It's a bad take. There are broader points and plenty of time to get there. Ain't no apathy with this team. Never has been in my 22 years on radio here. Fans love to be emotionally all in with this team. They fill the stadium where they allowed to watch, even from 1-5. So, thus, we dust off an old school, best school, 10-1 just for fun, 9-noon trick called Rubrat. We generally only do it in emergency type situations. Haven't done it in a long time, and it generally is reserved for sports-related emergencies. We have and prefer human contact and emotion of voices and discussing things verbally instead of other more convenient routes. Don't rush. We have plenty of time. We are ready to hear takes on 8, the head coach, construction of the roster. I don't have any bullet points. Time to mesh the heart and the football mind and see what's going on with you. We're real fast. Fade the music, fire up 9-noon. Good morning, Matt Producer.
Good morning.
Things on which we will expound, but one is those verbally making public Mike Zimmer should lose his job now, being like, haven't we seen just this year what has happened with Atlanta and Houston following dismissals of coaches? That stance will not be taken seriously here. When you consider the totality of work, the 1-5 we are seeing, and the level of respect for the man, it's that if your thought is you have to fire the head coach now, that will be accepted here. It will not be respected, but it will be heard. He's a respected man, not only here, but league-wide, and has fought his ass off for this team and town for years. You don't treat people like that and change the horse in the middle of the stream. That's talking about now. Lots of obvious and non-obvious bad when you are 1-5 and the region's most popular team. The Minnesota Vikings have cracked in the purge, and there's no denying that. The last three masked it. But there's no disputing, with some facets of the way yesterday and the first six have developed, we have cracked in the purge, and good morning.
Cracking would be almost an understatement at this stage, 1-5. The dam has burst. The dam cracked weeks ago and officially burst yesterday against a winless team. And everything, there's a tributary here as the dam has burst and the water is flowing. There's so many confluencing situations and parts of this, from an injuries, it's lack of play. We got people calling in wanting to get the coach fired. The GM's got to go. It's a bye week, so maybe we should start Nate Stanley now. There are all sorts of things. Can't run the ball without Dalvin in. What's Alexander Mattison good for? Why doesn't this defensive line do anything? Did we make a mistake with the cornerbacks? Cracking in the purge for the team itself.
They cracked.
With weird offseason, no preseason, weird camp, starting with Danielle Hunter early on. Where's he at? And that has now bled into or infected the fan base, who are now cracking before our eyes on the Bradshaw and Brian hotline.
But that is good, because they care.
Yes.
It's like after yesterday and a 1-5, fan line overtime, 9 to noon. If there's nothing and it's Covenant Cleanup provided by Crickets. That's a problem.
Apathy kills.
And it's not only the cliched apathy kills, and you don't want apathy. You want them to be polarizingly angry or polarizingly full of exaltation.
The respective ends of the spectrum.
But TV ratings for all sports, including the NFL, are down.
Yes, they are.
Okay, with everything, you saw it, you read it, you heard it, it was bad, comparatively speaking. And even in the empirical juggernaut, things are down.
Yep.
So,
about 10-15%.
The fact that they care as much as they do is, I think, a positive out of this entire thing through 1-5.
Well, I love that fans are mad. Fans deserve to be mad.
Right.
And fans looking forward to this season and looking forward to an opportunity, you know, you spend the money, you invest the time, you have every single right to be pissed off when your team's 1-5.
Yes, sir.
Regardless of whatever excuses, regardless of the amount of hope and the optimism that I have for this team because I want them to win every game, regardless of any of that, when you watch what you watched yesterday, I would hope you're pissed off, and I was actually kind of enthused or encouraged by the fact, by listening to Fanline and even talking to a couple of people on hold, that we have some people that are fired up about this team. They want them to be better. They're not, and they're angry.
Rube Rant time, 9 to noon, here and next segment. So if you call and get put on hold, we'll have a little break. Come back, and we'll get to you. That's how that's going to work, 9 to noon, 1-800-320-5326, 651-989-5326.
All this negativity that's in this town sucks.
Zimmer and Raheem Morris on the skull, on the Norseman logo following the game yesterday. This was caught on audio. Mike Zimmer sharing this with new Falcons coach Raheem Morris.
And I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
Calcutta Clipper guy, welcome.
How you doing, PA?
What's up, Calcutta Clipper? Blowing in, blowing out, Lake Influence.
Yeah, that's right, man. It's been, since I've used this moniker on your show, it was back in the PA and Scuba days.
Uh-huh. You see, caring and being pissed off at the team, or caring and loving the team, it pulls the old schoolers out of the woodwork, and you're one Calcutta Clipper guy.
I am one.
Go ahead, man. You got about 45 seconds. Give it to me.
Okay, well, here's the deal. I listened to it on iHeart, which was awesome. I had it on the TV, turned the volume down, listened. You got the delay was kind of screwed up, but that was all good.
Yeah.
What you said, I think it was in the second quarter when you said to Bursich, "Do these guys know that the bye is next week?"
No, I didn't say that, did I?
I just started laughing.
I didn't say that,
yes,
did
you
I?
Did.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, it was a little
anyway, to start the second half, when they fumbled that kickoff, I jumped out. I was just like, get on that ball. Because I was like, okay, we get that possession back. If they get, no, of course not. And Bursich just says, you got to be kidding me. That's when I knew, I was like, we're not coming back.
Yeah.
It was just one of those games.
Yeah, when Kirk threw the interception on the first play of the game, and when Matt Ryan shook on the great Eric Kendricks, Matt Ryan faked Eric Kendricks. Yeah,
he did.
That was not preferable. So many things today and tomorrow into which we will dive. Be patient. Jay in Coon Rapids, it's Rue Brandt. Welcome.
How's it going, guys?
Good.
As everybody's not happy. I might be on an island on my own, but I'm not getting rid of Spielman or Zim. They've done so much for the team. There's a lot of injuries this year. I wouldn't bring Daniil back. There's no reason to risk it. He's missing Barr. We got a lot of rookies. You got to get time, you know. Kirk Steele, it is what it is. You know, we're not happy, but it is what it is, boys. I'm not cutting ties with either of them. I love them. Has Spielman been perfect throughout his career with us? No. But he's got more hits than misses, I know. Zim's a hell of a coach, so I'm behind him. I'm not happy with the season at all. We got to do something to fix this. Maybe not this season, but I'm behind you, PA. Let's do it. Have a good day, boys.
See you, bud. Have a good day. 9 to noon, FM 100.3, KFAN.
Touchdowns sound better in FM.
Touchdown! Joe!
Lamar, PA, first time, long time here.
What's up, bud? Welcome.
Hey, so I got, watching football all over this year, it got me thinking a little bit. You know, people kind of hate the preseason for what it is, whatever. Mm-hmm. But if anything, this year has shown us that the preseason is absolutely necessary because you have no way of knowing what you're going to get with those rookies if you don't give them time in the preseason to develop. And you got no way of knowing what you're going to need going into the regular season. If you think about it, the first 4 weeks of the year, yeah, we had some rough ones, but you know, when you have all rookies, with the exception of your safeties, in the backside of your defense, what do you expect when you get sub receivers? They're going to get burned.
It's a fair way to look at it, but that there has to be more to it when it's 1-5. The previous caller was like, with Kirk, it is what it is. When it's the quarterback, and if that is what it is, like 2018, but not like 2019, it can't be that way. It just can't. So bye week, season, off season, every single topic you are thinking right now, every single one has off season merit. But only certain ones have merit right now. More calls in the next segment, 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. Everything's courtesy of TimberTech and TimberTech.com. What's on deck 9 to noon includes PJ Fleck joining the radio show at about 11:40. 9 to noon is fortunate to have PJ Fleck, coach of the Golden Gophers, weekly beginning today. That's at 11:40. Much more, including more of your Rue Brandt phone calls around the corner. But first, thanks to Wixon Jewelers, here comes that cash thing.
Yeah, this might be a positive for you to start your week if the fan Wixon Jewelers, who want to give you a shot to put a grand in your hand and you actually win it, that'd be sweet, right? Despite the 1-5, you're $1,000 richer. So just text the keyword fun to 200-200. The game wasn't fun, but winning $1,000 is. Text fun to 200-200. You might win $1,000 with the National Cash Contest. Text fun to 200-200. Text message and data rates apply. 9 to noon returns next.
Now, with Metropolitan Ford in Eden Prairie, key times right now as we are in the fourth quarter of this 2020. And from a car dealership standpoint, in the fourth quarter means fewer than 60 2020 F-150s in stock at Metropolitan Ford. So with the 2020 F-150s, great time to head to Metropolitan Ford 494 and 5 in Eden Prairie and see what you can get out of these 2020 F-150s. Best deals of the year on the 2020 F-150s right now because the model change for the F-150 is coming with 2021. And it includes like all new 12-inch display, it's a giant iPad that runs most everything in your truck. Max reclining seats available that literally will lay flat. This 2021 F-150 is going to rule the roost. But you can take advantage of that 2020 F-150 right now at Metropolitan Ford. Get a great deal. MetropolitanFord.com, Eden Prairie, 494 and 5. Metropolitan Ford, your truck super
rules.
Cousins goes play action from under center. He'll whip one over the middle, intercepted immediately. First pass picked off Deion Jones. Burke with a straight drop. Passes intercepted in the 41. The second pick thrown by Kirk Cousins today. Cousins, straight drop, ball skip, third pick. And it's the third interception today for Kirk Cousins.
The silicon chip inside her head gets switched to overload. And nobody's gonna go to school today. She's gonna make them stay at home. Daddy doesn't understand it. He always said she was good as gold. And he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be shown? Tell me why I don't like Mondays.
Same.
Tell me why I don't like Mondays.
Same. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I wanted to see where he was going with
that. Hoping we weren't having a suicidal moment there from Boomtown Rats guy.
Yeah, shoot the whole day down. Yes.
Yeah, nice pull on that song. Rubrant, it's Therapeutic Davenport of Love. We've done it a million times. Not quite like this. Certainly in a purge from a 1-5 with Matt Ryan, one of the great play-action quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. Todd Gurley still with plenty of juice at this stage of his knees. Julio, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst is pretty good. And, you know, then you got all that youth with the corners. Hughes goes down. Sad for Mike, another injury. Harrison Hand, fifth round from Temple, rolls in. Dantzler is having problems. And then Gladney also is a rookie. And against all that, it's we saw what happened. Question is, should it have happened that way? I mean, there are so many tentacles to a 1-5 conversation. A good thing we have this radio show, good thing we have long segments, good thing we have plenty of time, and good thing we care about it, because there's much about which to chat. Stefan, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, PA?
What's up, man?
So I got a couple of quick takes. I normally don't call in. I guess I was so frustrated, I tried to call in last night after the
right.
game, and couldn't hold on, but my first comment is I disagree with your take and it being disrespectful to fire coach during the season.
No, well, if you're hold on. If we're going to agree or disagree respectfully, then you got to get my take right, because now if I didn't say fire a coach in the middle of the stream, I said this coach.
Right. Okay. So let me correct myself. This coach. I understand that it's not ideal, and Zimmer is a great coach. I love the man to death on the mentality. When we all the coaches that we've had, this is the type of coach I've wanted the Vikings to have.
Yeah.
Nose, discipline, focus. But at the same token, every coach in the NFL or any sport understands that this is part of the game. So to say it's disrespectful,
I'm going to disagree with you respectfully, and you do not now, like when Childress got fired in 2010. Okay,
that was a totally different situation. Yeah,
right. But things had gotten they went to the NFC title game the year before, so you know it was pretty good the year before, and then middle of the stream you get blown out by Green Bay and the guy's gone. Because things start to percolate, develop, and you know there's no way out. And that's not the case here. So if you, Mike Zimmer is an incredibly well-respected guy, not only within the team, within the fan base, and within the NFL. So, and when you say that that's just how things work when things get bad, I understand that, and I've seen it a million times. But I think we have some unique, peculiar, non-obvious things this year that have transpired
right.
up to the season we haven't had in the past. Now, that's in no way a scapegoat, because all 32 teams faced the same thing. But like
correct.
I said, everything everybody is thinking right now from my heart, everything, and I'm not going to laundry list it, it's whatever you're thinking, it has off-season merit. What you're thinking right now, I mean, when you fire somebody whose points per game defensively the last 5 or 6 years has been top five in the NFL, and you have been respected the way he is after six games, that is because you can't stand that individual so much you no longer want them around. When Bill O'Brien and J.J. Watt go to yelling at each other in front of everybody in a practice, that guy has to go. You see what I'm saying? That's not happening here.
So, PA, so this is what I was trying to get to. So that's one of the cases that I was going to bring up. Like the case in Houston, Bill O'Brien had to go. The fans for years wanted that decision to be made. And obviously, you know, the person who's paying the paycheck doesn't have to listen to the fans, but it was so far gone. I'm not a big Bill Belichick disciple type of guy. I don't think most of the coaches that, except for the coach in Tennessee, that has really done anything in the league. But my point being is, as I said, I respected Coach Zimmer on what he's done for the team. And that's one situation where you would make the decision. The second situation is where you have the team not performing up to the capability of their standards. And my take on Coach Zimmer being the head coach and not just a defensive coach and focusing on saying we've only X amount of points. He's the head coach of offense, defense, special teams. And unfortunately, in his entire run as head coach, the offense has struggled. So be it. I mean, we've had offensive coordinators that went on to get jobs after one successful year, and that's really no fault of his. But at the end of the day...
Okay, well, Stephon, so let's just dagger this right now. You believe somewhere before they play Green Bay, Mike Zimmer should be fired. See, you can't say it, because in your heart, you know it's wrong.
No. But that's my point being, and I might have been playing devil's advocate because, I love the coach. But again, my only issue is the season. And we've heard for many years is the coaching staff is great developing talent. Regardless of what's going on in the league, every single team has been faced with the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things where I think has affected this team more, or one thing that has affected this team more that not a lot of people is really talking about. If you watch most of the games, our defensive tackles, having that big body defensive tackle to take up space either.
Yeah. Hey, bud, I got to go. We know all that, and I appreciate your emotion and you opening your heart on the radio the way you did. I appreciate your phone call. Call more often, okay?
Yeah, no problem. Take care.
But I Booth at KFAN.com, Bradshaw and Brian inbox, calls, whatever. It's you don't disrespect and embarrass somebody who you have loved and respected as long as you have. And it would be, it's embarrassing. Did Nordo, you were right next to me, man.
Yeah.
I said it to Bursich and Lieber yesterday. When Deion Jones got that opening interception, and with a few things that transpired in the first 6-7 minutes of that game, did you see that Falcons bench?
They were on fire.
How happy were they Dan Quinn was gone?
I would say they were happy.
Okay. I mean, I'm guessing at that because I'm not juiced into the Falcons covenant. I mean, these kids were on fire jumping up and down like they were on the right side of coming back from 28-3 in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
their bubble had burst.
And to the point of that though is I how much of it was happy about Dan Quinn being gone as much as it was we're going to for better or worse, Raheem Morris, we're in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
This week has sucked. The coach is gone. We got to come out of the gates. And you start out with that. And then Julio's in the end zone. And you could see not only how excited they were about the early lead, but those guys on that sideline could look across and see from the top down, the head coach, the quarterback, who's just, whenever he makes a mistake, he stands on the sideline and pouts for a couple of minutes because he's just thinking about it. And sometimes he can't get it out of his head. Mm-hmm. And one mistake becomes five. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Falcons and I'm looking across that sideline, I'm like, here we go. This is our shot. There's no better way to start a game on the road. We're the winless product. Our coach just got fired. Dimitrov's gone and he drafted me.
Yep.
Let's get out here and get a win. So did they hate Dan Quinn? Probably not, but they certainly could smell the blood in the water early because the wind was gone from that first play of the game.
All right, I want to zing through these Rube Rant phone calls. Might take more later or tomorrow. Bob and Bismarck, 30 seconds go.
30 seconds, okay. The kickoff. I turn on the radio, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, what? We deferred. We are accepting. We did not defer.
Right.
Nobody does that. That's bad judgment, PA, by a head coach to start the game. Two rookies. It's around the NFL. It's a wide open league. They know they can throw the ball up in the air, and those two rookies have no ball skills. They shouldn't even be in the NFL. That's my rant.
Thank you. Well, that's idiotic, okay, with all due respect. The first part's not. I'm negative on taking the ball at the coin toss, and I don't care if you've gone through a week of practice and you think you have the freaking 98 Vikings with these plays you're running. If I win the toss, I want the ball in the third quarter.
As bad as that team's been in third quarters and second quarters specifically, the idea of not getting yourself that possession to start the second half, I thought that was a bad decision.
With all due respect, when I say it's idiotic to say Cam Dantzler and Jeff Gladney can't play after five games with no preseason games,
That's all you need.
There's nothing else to say. Jake, 30 seconds, go.
Hey, Paul, biggest thing I saw yesterday was just the play calling. You know, Kubiak, he's been around, but offense is changing and he's not. You know, we're starting the game in play action. What is that?
Well, let me ask you this.
Running the ball?
Let me ask you this, and I don't understand the Boone fourth and goal from the one. I mean, you're first and goal from the two. You got to get in. But three games, they had averaged 450 a game, and over the last two games, 190 rushing yards a game. And they're top three rushing in the NFL. That's part of it, too.
I think my biggest thing is there's no Dalvin. You know what I mean? Dalvin's such a freak, and I'm a little bit of a believer in a running back's a running back, but Dalvin's special. Hey, thanks, Paul.
Appreciate you. Kilroy, hello.
Hey, what's going on with your PA?
What's up, Kilroy?
Hey, rest in paradise to Sid, man.
Ain't no doubt.
The only thing I really want to know is what the Vikings organization had against Case Keenum. I mean, if we were to retain Case for one more year, you know how much money we could have saved to build an offensive line?
Right, but with Case.
That was on Zimmer. That was on Zimmer. Yeah, he didn't like
it. Hey, you know what, Kilroy? There's a ceiling with Cousins. There's no doubt about it. But there also was a ceiling with Case. And what happened in that NFC title game, after Case left, what did he do? The answer is nothing.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about if we would have gave him one more year.
I don't know.
That team?
They formulated the opinion you caught lightning in a bottle with Case, and I happen to think they were right. Was Cousins the right long-term answer? I can't say yes. But with Keenum, they caught lightning in a bottle, got lucky in the miracle game, and got killed the next week. Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, PA. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
This 1-5 season so far, I'm not ready to pull the plug by any means. I mean, we could easily be 3-3 right now. I mean, we took two playoff teams to the wire here with Seattle and Tennessee. And, you know, the whole tone of the season could be very different going into this bye right now if we were 3-3. I'm not ready to pull the plug on Zim. I'm not ready to pull the plug on Spielman. I think they're good coaches. They're good guys to have in those spots, especially for the long term success of the organization. As far as that call with Dantzler and Gladney, that guy had, that's just idiotic. Couldn't agree more. Those guys, I think, are having a pretty fair first start of the season here, given no preseason. With regards to coaching that sort of thing, and Kirk. I think right now, Kirk, he's forcing too many balls when he's throwing out there. I feel like that's the biggest thing of them. I mean, that pick against Seattle, pick against.
But he didn't last year. See, he didn't last year, and he did in 2018. And, you know, like Khan said to me 90 minutes ago when we were chatting this thing out, to get ready for it. There's so many confusing facets to the situation now. It's Cam Dantzler's ball skills at this part of his career are awful. They're awful. Trey Waynes was a first-round pick from Michigan State. His ball skills before he left here, they were bad too, you know, and they just really never got better. Now, where do you put that? Do you put that on Trey? Put that on the coaches? But from a Dantzler, Gladney, whomever standpoint.
I like Gladney growing up, as we see every single week.
I'm super happy both are on the team.
Yeah.
And we recognize through the first six games, we saw the 4th and 10 to DK. We saw a Julio moment yesterday. I think it was Julio.
You know, one thing
with Cam where he just got lost.
One thing we don't have enough time right now, but I want to get into, think about all the rookie offensive players that we're excited about. And then think about all the rookie defenders in the league right now, because Jeff Okuda is swimming in it in Detroit. 3rd overall pick, by far considered the best cornerback into the draft in 2020. Mm-hmm. Rookie defenders in the pandemic with no preseason, weird offseason. How are they developing? Not even close at the same stage as some of these offensive players are.
Yeah, that's all part of the totality of it, and it plays into the confusion in closing.
And so the patience for me with those guys is important.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. It can't emotionally, offensively, or stylistically fall off from Seattle to what we saw yesterday. That can't happen.
Well, I agree. Yeah.
That is what pisses me off.
Yes.
As a fan and as somebody who cares about the people with this organization.
100%.
You can't have that Sunday night against that guy who might be the MVP, and he's a cinch now with what A-Rodge did yesterday. He's a cinch at this stage of the race. You can't do that and then come back with that yesterday. That should piss off everybody. I mean everybody. And I'm talking inside to out.
FAN.
Hey, Matty Burke, Paul Allen, what's going on?
What's happening, Paul? Positivity, Paul.
Yeah, my Super Squares prediction yesterday, yardage-wise, long play-wise, probably good. Prediction-wise, Vikings winning, no good. Who took my money in squares yesterday?
Well, apparently, all the excitement was at Super Squares yesterday, Paul. Somebody with the screen name Power Trip Bets out of Kansas City, Missouri, had a perfect game going into the fourth quarter, Paul.
Ah.
There was $100,000 in play in fourth quarter of that drubbing that the Vikings took yesterday. Power Trip Bets unable to close the deal, but was the big winner at the KFAN Skybox, and he did beat your predictions and took home $500.
Well, well done, Chuck. We know Chuck well. Power Trip Bets down Kansas City way at Power Trip Bets via Twitter. In closing, because my clock management is terrible, and we of course will chat more long form later. Sid Hartman dies at age 100. And, you know, it took place in the second half of the game yesterday. And when I and we were informed, it just cast a pall over the booth and over the building with those who knew it. I know you knew Sid for many, many years, and you being a Minnesotan, what did Sid Hartman mean to you?
Well, I remember when I got there in 1998, I mean, Sid was an institution then. It was when I saw him the first day that I was there in the locker room. I mean, it was like seeing a celebrity, you know. It was, yeah, Chris Carter, Todd Stussy, Randall McDaniel, yada, yada, yada. But there's Sid Hartman. I mean, he was part of my childhood. And it was just one of those guys walking around with his tape recorder. Sid, you know, there was rules for everybody else in the media. And then there were Sid's rules, which were basically no rules. He'd come back in the back to the offensive line card game and you know, Sid hanging out in the locker room for all those years. If you're gonna hang out in the locker room, you've gotta have thick skin, you've gotta be pretty aggressive, and Sid developed that or was born with that. He would give it out and take it. He was just like, it was almost like he was one of the guys. And I was actually in the car yesterday when you announced that on the telecast, and it was like, whoa. It was just amazing. What a life, what a legacy, what a legend.
Two games today, 30 seconds, Super Squares, both games. What do we do?
Just the late game tonight, this 4 o'clock bit, that's going to be really weird. But we'll be playing tonight. You are on a horrible losing streak, Paul. I'm kind of rooting for you to not lose your money tonight. But then again, I'm kind of rooting that you do, because it's good for everybody.
Yep, and I'll tweet about it later. We'll talk about it more later. I appreciate you, Matt. Have a good day.
All right, Paul. Thanks, bud.
Yep, see you, bud. All righty, to the next trick.
Here's the snap to Brady, a little low. Brady picks it up, looks upfield. He still looks. Passes toward the end zone. Caught ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Great throw, Brady. And a remarkable catch by Tyler Johnson. The rookie has his first TD. And the Bucs add to the lead.
That is courtesy of the Buccaneers Radio Network. Go Bucs, go Noles.
The head cheese.
What happened? I thought you were a cinch.
Well, I didn't.
You didn't?
I was concerned. I know you're a dedicated listener to Packer Preview. You probably slept in yesterday, but you know, I was worried about coming out of the bye, because last year Packers got blown out in Frisco following the bye, and I just wasn't sure what to expect after 2 weeks of hearing how good they were. But man, the way it started, PA, you know, 10 quick points on 2 drives, a 3 and out. I mean, everything was just looking. I couldn't believe how quick they started after the bye. That's what I was concerned about. And then Rodgers throws the pick 6, and then the next time the ball goes off Adams' hands, and it's picked again. And it's just clearly, I mean, the team just completely flipped after those 2 plays. Suddenly you're down 14, and Tampa Bay goes on to score the final 38 points of the game. Just a lot for me about the lack of a pass rush, which was not just yesterday, but that's kind of been a story this season. As good and aggressive as the Smiths were, and now Rashawn Gary in year 2 is supposed to be, I mean, the Bears showed how you beat Tampa Bay, and then Tom Brady uncomfortable. And Green Bay didn't get a sniff of Tom Brady yesterday. I was really surprised on both sides of the line how the Packers were manhandled by Tampa Bay. I thought they were stronger up both sides, Green Bay, especially with Vita Vea out. But clearly, Tampa won the battle up front, dominated the game, and Green Bay heads home looking to answer a lot of questions.
My neighbor and dear friend Cotton John, big-time Packers fan. Now, see, there's the problems within my professional football covenant are so deeply rooted that I had to deal with that in the afternoon emotionally and mentally. So I didn't watch a play of your game, with all due respect. Cotton John came and peeked over the fence as I was in the hot tub with Senor Smiley. And he's like, our offensive line, I can't believe what's happening, how bad this is. Nordo, who's not tied to the Packers, couldn't care less if they win or lose, kind of said the same thing to me this morning, and he watched the game. So, like, the offensive line, I know Bakhtiari got hurt, but, like, what happened? What happened with that line?
Well, yeah, losing Bakhtiari is obviously a huge blow, because they put Ricky Wagner in at left tackle. He's, you know, an average right tackle, and that obviously even good enough to start for Green Bay. And once he went in at left tackle, I mean, it was over. But it was more of a momentum thing. I mean, Green Bay was going to have a hard time running the football. Tampa Bay's came in as the number 2 defense in football. This is a legit unit. Todd Bowles was one of the best defensive minds around for my money. And, you know, you look at that talent, the front 7, with those speedy linebackers in David and Devin White.
Yeah.
And, you know, JPP, you know, now that Bakhtiari's not there, he feasted. So it was just, you know, you hope to chalk it up to just one of those days against a really good team that came in embarrassed after handing a game to the Bears and having 10 days to hear about how Tom Brady can't count to 4. And they came in kind of angry and frustrated, and Green Bay came in kind of fat and happy. And, you know, it's just this kind of team, this physical, defensive-oriented team, like San Francisco, like the Chargers, those are the teams that blew out the pack last year, they give this team troubles. And until they can figure it out, we're not going to get to where we want to go.
Cindy, the situation with my professional covenant and what's most deeply rooted in my heart professionally is so complicated and so confusing and so weird that I can't even make fun of the fact that Elgton Jenkins and Marquez Valdes-Scantling had as many tackles as Za'Darius and Preston Smith. I can't even joke about that. So bad luck next week. Hopefully Deshaun goes for 450 and 7. J.J. Watt, or the skeletal remains thereof, maybe he's on 2.5 sacks. Of course, we hope you lose, and hopefully, professionally and personally, your week's not great. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, each week we're getting closer and closer to Zim being our defensive coordinator next year. That might be a good thing for all of us.
Come on. Come on. You. That was very that was very clever. Hey, bless you, buddy, and your family. Talk soon, all right?
All right, see you, PA.
Yep, super special Cindy, Dave Sinekin at DC Head Cheese via Twitter. TheHeadCheese.com is his website. The Analyst.
The Analyst. Bursage. The voice of the Vikings. PA and Bursage.
Just go. I mean, it, you know, after dusting off some Rube Rant phone calls, after the reason I opened the show the way I did today is, you know, I listen to Fanline and I will listen to Overtime with the kids, with Sauce and AJ and Nordo.
Yeah.
And I will more so do it from a cathartic standpoint just to see what's on people's minds, whether they win or lose. And, you know, it's so much easier. For me, at least. And good morning.
Good morning.
It's so much easier when you are talking to somebody face-to-face or you are hearing inflection in voice and desperation or exaltation in voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to determine the heat check for negativity or positivity as opposed to seeing a spitballing comment on social media and not having a feel for it, you know?
Right.
So the reason that I started taking emotional, negative phone calls en masse is because I could sense, I mean, this public, and you know it, man, you played here. You were on that 98 team that, I mean, you were an inch from potentially winning it all and being favored in the Super Bowl, and you lost in the NFC title game. That the 2009 Favre bit, that for me is still below 98. From a fan standpoint, it's close. That they could be about the same thing, but you're favored by 10. You're at home. Moss is a rookie. Mm-hmm. So on and so on and so on. So what I'm getting at here is...
Yeah, I was having a good day up until now. Thank you.
Well, you started it yesterday with the take a knee line during the broadcast with the Falcons. But what I'm getting at is I could really, really feel yesterday with Fan Line and Overtime.
Yeah.
The passion, the level of care, and the level of frustration with fans. It's antithetical to apathetic, and it certainly is not glee. So,
well, anyone listening could hear it from us.
True.
You know?
True. But you know, we got to play. So you know, we are like that, you know, I think Nordo played a highlight. I mean, I don't even remember saying this, where I said the entire flow of the state of Minnesota went one way, and Hayden Hurst went the other, and it's ridiculous how far clear he was.
Listen,
then here comes a play. We're not going to take calls and hear those voices. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, when Matt Ryan is outrunning your defensive tackle to the sideline, and I remember asking to point that out. I remember asking Lieber. Yeah. I did it a couple times.
Yep.
I said, did I just see?
Matt Ryan shook on Eric Kendricks.
Yeah.
And this is not an affront to Kendricks because he's en route to becoming one of the best linebackers in the history of a storied franchise.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan shook on Eric Kendricks.
Think about this. So he gets around Jaleel Johnson, he shakes on Kendricks, and then he fakes a scramble pump fake to get Gladney to leave Julio Jones alone.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I jotted that down and I couldn't remember why. Why did that piss you off so much?
Because the corner doesn't have anything to do with chasing down a quarterback.
Thank you.
Cover your guy.
Yeah.
You had Eric Kendricks for secondary contain anyway. That's getting back to do your job.
Yeah.
Do your job.
So Coach Bursage came out that moment.
Yeah. Do your job. Cover your man.
Yep.
And don't, I mean, if you're, obviously Matt Ryan had not crossed the line of scrimmage yet because it would have been a penalty.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Breaking on the quarterback.
Yeah.
Cover your man. Right. That's your job. You know, and so it's just like Cameron Dantzler. Two really nice tackles in the flat, and then the next play you got Julio Jones bracketed. And a bracket means one guy on either side, not two guys on both on one side, you know? And pass touchdown. I mean, what a shot in the arm Julio Jones was for Atlanta yesterday.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of mistakes that just, here's the thing, teams that are very inconsistent, this has been my experience with coaching and playing and watching this for a very long time, You'll have, there are teams that 1 week you're like, it's the old, who's going to show up? Which Viking team is going to show up? Or which team is going to show up? That is a sim, that is, that comes up a lot when you have young players at key positions, because that's the life of a young player. 1 week they're going to look great. The next week they're not. And there's no rhyme or reason to it. They're just young. What you cannot have are your highly paid veterans going out there and playing good 1 week, terrible another week. That doesn't go.
Right.
You pay someone for a level of consistency. In fact, there are a lot of players out there who don't get paid because of lack of consistency.
Yeah.
Now, and being on the field is the first step in being consistent. So when you look at a Mike Hughes and you say that guy sucked up all those snaps in practice all during the week, and then he lasted what, half the game or whatever, and how many times have we seen this happen? It's like you need to either get that thing fixed or, you know, you're never going to be a starter. You'll be a backup the rest of your entire career, because you're never going to make, as much as we poke fun at Xavier Rhodes,
yeah,
right, with the pulling, you know, the hamstring and the limp and all, he played.
Yeah.
He was out there. He was out there for 18, 17, 16 games a season.
Yep.
And that's how you get better. Mm-hmm. You have to be out there game after game after game after game. And the other part that bothered me was, you know, you look at a guy like Dantzler, was right at the end when they scored, he walked out of the back of the end zone and then walked along the side to the bench, because he was just limping. I don't know what's going on, but it was as if he had enough. He's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm shot. I'm
well,
done. When and the, that so bothers the hell out of me.
With the way you were laying that first thing out, maybe I'm wrong here, Peter. Pete Bursich, analyst of Vikings Radio Network, former linebacker and special team stud for the Purple and Gold, also linebacker's coach for a handful of years with Mike Tice's head coach. I felt you passive aggressively or in a roundabout way. What's funny?
Passive aggressively.
Well, I felt you were referencing the quarterback, because that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because 2018, okay, his first year here, and you know this better than the majority of people listening, the situation with John DeFilippo was so toxic and so bad that he didn't make the season in his first year, and the owners were willing to cut a fat check to get him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I can draw a line through a fair amount of that season for Cousins, and I've said that on the radio before, that I'm going to draw a line through that one. Your first year here, bad situation with a bad hire in DeFilippo. Now we go to the next season, and with the best team for which he's ever played, or with whom he's ever played, best season he's had in his career, you win a playoff game at New Orleans, largely due to Zimmer's non-obvious with the defensive ends going to defensive tackle, right, wrecking the game and wrecking Breeze, and also Dalvin's fortitude in that game.
He let a great drive in overtime. Yeah,
but he didn't dagger the game. Okay, he didn't kill the game and throw it away like he did yesterday.
No,
like he did repeatedly in 2018. So now, when you, whether you're highly compensated or you're Nate freaking Stanley, you can't throw that pass to Deion Jones, and you can't throw that pass to KJ Wright. You can't. And I don't care about what money anybody makes. You're the most important freaking player on the team.
Yep.
Because you touch the ball more than anybody.
Yep.
So after the game, you can, for the second time in your career, with all due respect, say, if I keep playing like that, well, I'm not going to be playing. You know they're not putting Sean Mannion in the freaking game. Okay, it's not happening. So don't say it. And secondly, push through it like you did last year. I don't care if there was no preseason, new offensive coordinator, how freaking confusing it is. You got potentially the offensive rookie of the year on your team. And secondly, and you led to this yesterday, I thought it out, and man, are you dead right. You led to this during the game yesterday. Without Dalvin Cook, this son of a mother cannot fall off as far as it does.
Right. Yeah, and especially him. In fact, it should be the opposite. If you don't have Dalvin Cook, then who's the next guy that's going to carry the burden of his production on their shoulders? It should be the quarterback. Now, you can go back to 2018. You go back, two years ago.
Yeah.
I want to see his numbers the first 6 weeks of that season compared to this season. I know he hasn't thrown as many interceptions as he has this season.
Look at that snot nose good over there. Because I swore to him this morning, we're going to talk this thing out, be therapeutic, we're going to be calm and everything, and I ain't going to get mad, even though I'm pissed off at eight things. And I got mad, and mad producer smiled.
No, it's good. It
took an hour and 11 minutes.
I'm sorry.
But here's the other thing, too. The anger and the frustration is, it's natural, it's good. And part of me, and I'm not in the locker room, I'm not around that, I don't know what goes on. My issue, though, is you listen, we do with Rosie and Ben and I, we do the post game show, and you get to listen to the post game pressers, which I never really did except for what you did on the way home on the radio. I just want someone, again, to look into the Zoom camera and say, this isn't good, it's not right, it's got to get fixed, and it's going to start with me. Can somebody please just get pissed off in a post game interview?
But Zimmer's done that. I mean,
I'm not worried about that. I'm not talking about the coach.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the players.
I see.
Can somebody please just show me you care?
And be real.
And they might in the locker room. I don't know. And they might be that way around their teammates.
I see what you're saying, buddy.
I pray that they are. But who is it?
Yeah.
Will somebody please just show me you're pissed off?
Yeah.
We're all pissed off. And then we're looking at these guys going, well, you know, we got to get better. It's like,
still a lot of football.
Be a human being.
Yeah,
it's awful.
We all get that. We all get it's week to week. They're not thinking the next 10 games. They're thinking week to week to week. You can't look. You don't look more forward than 7 days. That's it.
Yep.
Just get pissed off for me, please. Just somebody.
That's beautifully
do
stated.
Something to show that you know it's not okay
that there's
with
a
you
pulse.
Guys. Because right now we're looking at this going, I don't know.
There's no hope.
Well, hold on. Now, hope is different.
And hope is subjective.
Here's what I'm saying, though. We're watching this game. We're frustrated. And we're just fans. And we understand that. Yeah. I'm not sitting here saying we think we're part of the team or riding on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
But we're pissed off. Where is that translating on the field?
Yes.
Where is this translating in the post game? You know, where is this? Can I see a guy throw a helmet out of frustration, please?
You want them to mirror and validate the
please?
Way we're feeling right
and not,
now.
And not in a Diggs way where it's, hey, look at me, I'm not getting the ball, so I'm going to throw a temper tantrum.
Or not show for a practice at 2-2.
That's what I mean. I'm saying, can somebody just get in the face of someone?
Yeah.
Grab somebody by their proverbial neck and say, this isn't okay.
Yeah,
this is not good. This is not how this is supposed to be. We've got we're missing our running back. Okay, fine. We've got a young guy starting at guard. Okay, we all need to pick up the slack, and I'm going to do it. You're going to do it, and you, Mr. Quarterback, are going to do it too. And that's the part that just if you talk about something that sets that gets you going or gets me going, it's that.
And when the guy throws an interception on the first play of the game, at just a few minutes after.
I mean, come on. You're playing a winless team that's blown 16-point leads. So what do they feel? They feel snake bit. They feel like, God, things just don't go our way. Bam. First play of the game. Oh, my God. The game's going our way.
Right.
The worm has turned.
But what I'm getting at is when you do that a couple minutes after you have won the toss and taken the ball.
Correct.
Which, by the way, is not unilaterally going to be accepted within the covenant. Okay? I mean, for the head coach to win the toss and take the ball, that means he's been convinced during the course of the week that we got some offense here.
Right.
That we're going to jump these guys and bury them early.
Right.
Okay? So now you unilaterally, you probably don't have support with that. Then your quarterback throws that bad pick. Awful pick, worse than the KJ Wright pick. After the game, Zimmer was asked about that. And I brought this up Nordo earlier. Zimmer was asked about the paraphrasing, how did it play to the rest of the game? How deflating was it? A coach, 9.5 out of 10 times, whether he believes it or not, and you know this because you were in it and I wasn't, they have to say, whether they believe it or not, well, it wasn't good and obviously not preferred, but we still have 75 plays left to win the game.
Correct.
Zimmer didn't say it. Zimmer was like, that paraphrasing definitely played into it. And the second one was deflating too.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, he told it like it was, which is Zim being Zim.
Right.
But from a realistic standpoint, as I said to Norto before you came in, it can't go from what we saw last Sunday to what we saw yesterday.
Yep.
It can't.
No.
And that falls on everybody, including the coach.
And that team, by the way, didn't even get in the facility on Thursday. By the way, remember? They weren't even in practice Thursday. Yeah. They were watching video. They were watching right. Zoom videos with headphones.
Right.
And they came in here and they did that. They were up by multiple scores and they were still throwing the ball around the yard. They wouldn't do what most teams do, and that's run the ball.
Yeah.
Burn the clock. I mean, it was so you look and you step back and you go, okay, who made a statement? Well, the Vikings tried to by saying, we're missing Dalvin, but we're gonna take the ball. We won the toss, we're gonna take the ball.
Right.
And then 30 seconds later, you're going, oh, yeah. Dear Lord.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Here we go.
I'm going to get more into the when Dalvin doesn't play, what I think is happening, which is bad. But to first, some good news, Norto.
Good news indeed. The Fan and Wicks and Jewelers want to give you a shot to put a grand in your hand with our national cash contest. Text the keyword home to 200-200. Text the keyword home to 200-200. Might win $1,000. Home. Text it to 200-200. Text message and data rates apply, and now it's time for a promise.
And the promise is when you work with Josh Pomerleau and the Pomerleau team at J.P. Willman Realty Twin Cities, the Pomerleau promise simply is, if they don't sell it, they will buy it. And we recognize stuff changes, specifically in this insipid 2020. So if necessary, the Pomerleau team will let you out of a contract at any time. So now, with Josh and his team, even though they sell like more than 350 homes a year, when you list with the Pomerleau team, you feel like you're their only client. They're very, very good with the personal touch. The Pomerleau team ranks in the top 250 with agents in the entire country, and that's out of like 1.5 million agents. They do good work. And the Pomerleau promise is second to none. It is PomerleauTeam.com, PomerleauTeam.com.
The Fan. It's just me against the world.
Football, like many sports, can be a big sample game. Baseball is, in the 162 piece, baseball is the greatest example for the long form to establish the opinions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So me taking a couple of examples here, it's a little flimsy, but I do believe that it is a two-game piece that needs to be reviewed and or discussed. And it's in the Green Bay game last year. Okay, Dalvin and Madison didn't play. So Pettine came into the game knowing that this guy, 23, he's not going to beat us, even if we have five in the box. He's not beating us. He's not going to hit the right hole or do the right thing, and you're not throwing to him. So here's how we're going to construct a game to ruin your evening. And they were right. Now, with Madison yesterday, with him as the lead vocalist, and Boone as the secondary guy, it appeared to me the way they constructed their defense, they're like, we know 25 is not going to get outside frequently. We know you're not going to throw to him. So we are going to do things a certain way. And it's going to, if you stop your running game, we don't believe your quarterback will beat us for the balance of a game. Do you think all of that is accurate?
I think I don't break down film anymore, and I haven't watched the game and all that, but what stood out to me, it seemed like they blitzed more, but they did so of the, I don't know if it was a zone style or whatever, but they sent more guys off the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning if you run to it, you're running right into the teeth of it. A couple of those TFLs where you were running right, a zone right into the teeth of the blitz.
Yes.
If you ran away, yeah, you might have got a yard or two, but what it does is when you're sending guys off the edge and stunting guys underneath, it eliminates the bootleg because Cousins pulled up a couple times and had a guy right in his face.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
So I think they did that to stop that, you know, that outside type run. They just moved the guys up front and blitzed off the edges a lot more than what teams normally do. Now, how do you, you know, what's the answer to that? Well, I mean, screens work well. You know, the old proverbial live by the blitz, die by the blitz. If you have a hot route, slant, catch it, run it for, you know, those are the things that you can do. You know, I, Paul, the thing is that you can't say scheme, you can't, but what is different this year with Cousins? What's going on? Right? Is it the communication? Is it, you know, the scheme's different. It's not the same passing game you had really a year ago. But what is it? What's the problem?
Yeah.
What's the issue? Because you could say, well, it's not all in the coach per se. It's like this is the kind of the evolution of the sport where you're like, well, he just doesn't run a system that fits the player. I mean, you can say that about if you're asking a quarterback to do something physically he cannot do. Matt Ryan is not a scrambling quarterback. You're not going to run, you know, so if you have Cam Newton, of course you're going to, you know, I mean, that makes sense. But when it comes to the mental side of the game and what you're asking them to do, it's not all on the coach. It's not, your job as an owner or GM is not to go find a coach that fits the player. It's kind of, it's a marriage of sorts. It's kind of, this is what we do. This is what you need to do. This is, and then, you know, you have to teach it and then whoever's learning it has to buy into it. And it, so somewhere in that mix, there is a problem because that man does not look comfortable behind when he's dropping back.
Right.
I've seen him double catch snaps all year long. It's like, this is something, if you see that in high school, you say, all right, you two guys stay after practice. I want 100 snaps out of both of you, right?
Yeah.
That's what, it's just, there's something missing there.
I agree.
Now, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And none of us will know what that is.
Because Cook's never been better. Thielen was tied for the NFL lead in touchdowns. And Jefferson might be rookie of the year.
It's not lack of talent at the receiving positions.
And by the way, Reef and O'Neal had been playing better as tackles, specifically Reef, than Riley has played in a while around
him. And he's the one guy in the off. He's like the one guy that took a pay cut. He's playing great. What does that tell you?
Right.
How about that? Anyway, but he, you know, you've got Jefferson, Thielen, Irv Smith Jr., who on that bootleg, you know, they run the bootleg and he plants his foot and runs the corner. That was a beauty. You have very good, you have talent. The cupboards are not empty.
Yeah.
This isn't Chicago where you have a one-trick pony at wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right? This is, you have talent out there. What is going on? What is the deal?
That's very
what
fair,
is man. He not seeing?
Yeah.
What is he not something? He's not comfortable with something because
that's very fair.
He gets to the top of the drop and it's not.
Yeah.
You watch other teams, man, especially the outlet routes. Right, there was a bootleg that I forget his name because we haven't said it in so long. Tyler Conklin.
Oh yeah,
a little bootleg. Tyler Conklin's run across the middle of the field. No one's within 10 yards of him, but it's a short play, and then Cousins threw it deep. I believe it was to Thielen.
Yep.
These bootlegs and these little quick flat routes and all that, the whole idea is to get the ball out quickly and get it in the hands of the tight end so he can turn up before the defense can react. And instead of a 1 yard gain or a 2 yard gain, it's a 7 yard gain or a 5 yard gain.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's what's going on. The timing is just not there. The ball just never gets there when it's supposed to.
No, you're right.
Or so it seems.
You're
that's
right.
The feeling that you get.
Obviously,
so what
it's
the
not
hell
never,
is going on? What's going on with
times.
That?
Yeah.
That needs to get fixed.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that, and, you know, as far as play selection go, like I said, going into the game, I did this little, I mean, I dug into the numbers like a geek, and I'm thinking, all right, 3rd and 6 to 10. Our average passing distance on 3rd and 6 to 10 is 4 point something yards, 4.35 yards.
Yeah, you said it yesterday.
Okay. The second pick that Cousins threw, even if it was completed, it wouldn't have been a first down. Why do you make that throw? Why? Nothing good is going to happen except you are going to get a point in your completion column is going to go from 7 out of, you know, you're 7 for 10, you're going to go to 8 for 11.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Even if he caught it, it would not have been a first down.
Yeah.
Why are you throwing that ball? Why? It doesn't make any, see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's when you scratch your head. You're like, the only thing that can happen is bad.
Yeah.
It's the only, the guy's not going to run after the catch because it's, run the damn curl past the sticks or past the marker. If it's going to be a throw, catch, tackle, the catch has to be past the sticks, past the yard to gain. You got to be that far or else it's not going to happen. If it's a check down or something and you want that guy to run, then get him the damn ball as quickly as you can so the guy can do something with it once he catches it.
Yeah.
So the second pick, the first pick was awful. The second pick is you're scratching your head going, what are we doing here? Nothing good's going to happen here. Nothing. Those are the things that I would want to be. I want, if I'm Ziggy, I'm like, can I get some answers to the? I just have, you know, or if you're Rick or whomever, you're just, and as a fan, I have these questions. You're never going to get them answered. That's fine. I understand that. That's in-house.
I got it.
You know what I mean? That's for them to figure out. I'm just trying to give everybody a sneak peek into what really goes on when you get back on the bus and you get back into the, you know, you're watching film today and you're asking the big questions, and those are the things that they have to deal with and they have to figure out.
Kirk killed the game yesterday, and he didn't kill games in 2019. In fact,
I go back to the Green Bay game, was it 2018, where we had the field goal, or the punt blocked, and they scored, and Cousins pretty much single-handedly brought us back into that game.
Yeah.
We didn't win it, but that's what he can do, Carlson, and that's what we need him to do.
Kirk killed the Lambeau game last year, but he wrecked the game yesterday. And see, Mad Producer, the spotter for the vast and ever-expanding Vikings radio network at halftime, reminded me, we were down 20-0 to Denver, and your quarterback led the comeback. And I didn't say flippantly to him, well, it ain't happening. I don't think I said anything. I just went and sat down, enjoyed halftime, came back, called the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But Cousins, one of Kirk's highlight moments for me last year was when he went like 6 of 8 or 8 of 10 in the first half of that Broncos game because he didn't force it. And he didn't kill the game.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that was the maturation of our quarterback that we continued to see that we knew would give us hope to win playoff game or potentially games. He wrecked the game yesterday, and he wrecked it multiple ways. And you couldn't come back from it, even down 20-0. We saw it early in the game, man. I mean, Atlanta's sideline, those kids were bound and determined to not let Dallas or Chicago happen again. But you still had plenty of time to make it happen again.
Absolutely.
And didn't. And
I know. Look at
but
the
effort. But it fairly plays into it. No Dalvin and rookie debut at right guard. That fairly plays into it, but it is not the overriding reason. The offense, which was averaging 450 a game the last three. They ran the ball 81 times the last two. Okay? Now, with no Dalvin, that's going to come back. But it can't come back from Sunday night to yesterday as precipitously as it did.
No, I can't disagree with you on that. And then the old 20-point comeback that you had with Denver, that was squelched right after the opening kickoff. When the guy put it on, Kiwane or whatever his name is, maybe put it on the ground and we didn't recover it.
Oh, the bit yesterday, Brandon Powell.
Yeah. No. Yeah. He tried.
Yeah. Powell was trying to lose the game twice.
When you said that, I was
pissed off.
Well, no, you were right.
Yeah.
You were absolutely right.
Yeah.
You could tell this was a team that didn't know how to play with a lead because they do stupid things like that, like throwing the ball so much it's like, oh my God, you guys are giving us opportunities to take advantage of it, and they didn't. So that tells you something right there. But no, the fall off. No, it can't be. Yeah, Paul, you're stating. I think you're stating the obvious. That's the inconsistency part. Inconsistency part that I think Zimmer was talking about when he said, "How do we go out to the West Coast, play in the toughest environment, hold that team to the wire, and then come here and lay an egg?" And now Atlanta with Julio Jones back and whatnot, they're not 0-5 disaster like maybe the Giants, or the Jets. But you expect to be competitive. You get your doors blown off.
With no pass rush and ending up with three rookies at corner, you're not going to win. versus Julio Ridley, Gurley.
You're not going to win when you throw three picks.
No doubt.
Period.
But we were looking defensively, and you referenced Atlanta offensive players. And by the way, Atlanta's offensive line is so dramatically better than Seattle's. That was something that was eye-opening to me, too. Last one, Norgo.
Yeah, my last one, I guess, is, you know, I've heard you say this twice now, PA. Alexander Mattison, he's not Dalvin. Atlanta knows they're not going to throw it to him.
Mm-hmm.
We've now seen it twice now. And it was into, and that defense was Zadarius and Preston Smith, unbelievable. But you have a Mike Boone who balls out against the Chargers. Then he has to play in a game without either Dalvin or Alexander Mattison. And it was an abject failure. It was awful. And so then fast forward to this year. We see Alexander Mattison get a buck 12 on the ground against Seattle once Dalvin goes down with the adductor, the growing bull or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he does his thing, and now fast forward, and it is an abject failure. So I'm curious. I know he's not Dalvin. However,
well, I'm just going to lay it out like this. Atlanta's defense is better than Seattle's defense with what we saw in Seattle last week. With Quentin Dunbar coming off a layoff, Quentin Dunbar can't play. Okay, he couldn't play when he was with Washington. He can't play now. He's okay. But Ken Norton Jr. and Pete Carroll have a way better than, if not as well as anybody in the history of football, of squeezing every positive thing out of everybody you have. Down Jamal Adams and down their pass rush. Seattle's pass rush is nondescript. Atlanta's was too.
Yeah.
But Atlanta's defense is every bit as good, if not better, than Seattle's defense with what we saw yesterday compared to that Sunday night.
And but that's mediocrity versus mediocrity. So what I'm saying is 200 yards shouldn't come back to 40. I mean, that's what frustrates me. And so it goes beyond just not having Dalvin and our reaction to it from a preparation standpoint.
I ain't looking to argue with anybody, but it's idiotic if you think being down 3.5 to 4 scores, you're going to run the ball. You got to throw. I mean, they had to throw from middle second quarter on. So do you think that's going to play into the creativity of the running plays or the numbers?
As we were standing there in the booth early on, and it was specifically in reaction not only to the first pick, which was the first play, but then you watch the first two or three drives, the question had to have been asked, there was a stark change from the offense that we saw with Dalvin to the offense we saw without. And if you're averaging 450 a game with Dalvin, I know that's going to change. I'm not trying to make Madison, but I felt like there was a sea change in terms of how we wanted to attack a team without Dalvin. And I don't understand why Madison has to be different, why we have to change an entire game plan. Just concerned me.
Yeah, I didn't see any attack at all.
Yeah, I'm not going to say they changed an entire game plan. I don't know. Well, I can't answer that. Alex is not in Dalvin's class and probably never will be. So there's that.
Yeah.
So we've taken the running back version of Mick Jagger and replaced him with something else. Okay? The songs aren't going to sound as good.
Right.
But you know that. But they know it too. But you know it too. They came into that game looking to throw. That's the only reason they take the ball at the coin flip. Because they felt they could throw on them and get what they wanted against a team that has a more toothless pass rush than us. I mean, Ngakoue has fallen into 5 sacks somehow. Their leading sack guy is Grady Jarrett at 2.5. So they're more toothless than Seattle's pass rush or ours.
Right, and so
they had an identity, but it got lost.
Well, but the identity is that this team runs the ball, and so Kubiak's been running. If Steve Slayton goes down, that was a big moment for Arian Foster, and he never looked back. Now, I'm not putting Alexander Mattison in Arian Foster's category. What I am saying, though, is our identity is running the ball. Our identity is not throwing all over the field on people, and we have a quarterback that requires the play action and requires some effective nature of a run game to get him to do what he wants to do.
I think,
and once you get predictable, you're out of it entirely, and I just felt from minute one, walking away from that identity, even without Dalvin Cook, proved to be a mistake, I think.
Well, Nardo, I remember the game against Green Bay here last year without Dalvin Cook. That was a paradigm shift in offense and what we tried to do. They tried to reinvent the wheel and throw the football, make, you know, would just be a drop back passing team, and it didn't work. It was abysmal. I didn't see that big of a paradigm shift in the play calling. I believe that they wanted to run Madison, but the game just got sideways.
Okay,
it became sideways quickly, especially when you think put yourself in a play caller position.
Yeah,
when you call a play, you practiced all week, first play of the game, and the guy throws that ball, you're going, well, what on my sheet can I call with confidence now? I mean, what am I going to go to? It's a mental meat grinder in the middle of a game like that, because you're going, I can't put this guy, if I can't trust him, I can't put him in position to make these kinds of plays.
Because
I can no longer trust him to do so. And so where do you go from there?
Your identity piece is right. But I can't dagger the answer because I haven't watched it back.
I understand.
I right now, if I had to guess, it was the gun to the head, we're going to spin the chamber, or we're going to spin the bit, and if it comes up wrong, you're dead.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to guess that our offensive line got pushed around as badly as it has the entire season.
Okay.
And that factored into the running game.
And that's where you need Dalvin in those moments because of his talent, his vision, and intangibles.
If you have Dalvin, we beat Seattle. With all due respect to Alex, because he gets it. You see how Gurley got it and Le'Veon Bell slow rolled it and then took off?
Yeah.
Dalvin has a little of that to him, too.
Yeah.
So he sees it, bump right, and we win. I understand what you're saying, but really until I look back at some things, I can't exactly answer. For them to take the ball on the corner, I just can't stress enough how antithetical that is to what the head coach wants to do.
Well, and then to that,
I'm going to bet that he was talked into it.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. I mean,
Zimmer taking the ball.
Yeah, but Zimmer going forward and fourth down as much as he has the last 2 weeks. How often have we seen that?
But that's fine because
he's a take the points guy, which we've seen. Like you would expect him to just kick. You got stopped again. Kick the field goal. It's 7-3.
Yeah.
Well, at least we got something on the board. We got something out of the. You know, out of the turnover.
The last one, I know we're hopelessly late.
No, it's all good. It's just the key to it goes back to what Ayuk is on fire. To what you guys have been talking about, the weird nature of how Zimmer answered that question. Did that pick change things for the rest of the game? And he basically admitted that it did, which I'm arguing a concept and a fantasy in my mind of something happening that didn't happen, which was all precipitated maybe by a terrible idea to take the ball out of the gates, a hideous, awful, might be one of the worst throws of his tenure in Minnesota, Kirk Cousins to Deion Jones.
Yeah.
And that changed the framework for everything.
What do you do when you look at your call sheet and you have zero confidence in anything you practiced all week is going to get done?
That first pick,
That is like...
Coach, tell me I'm wrong here. Kirk looked like he prepped that pass all week and, robotically speaking, wasn't going anywhere else.
No.
Because he was convinced it has to be there.
Did you see a replay of it?
Yeah.
Once Deion Jones intercepted it and he came down, there were five white jerseys in a circle.
Yeah.
Five. Right. Five.
We got to go.
Couldn't have been more white.
And how open was Adam Thielen, by the way? If we were going to quote-unquote take a shot.
Right. He wasn't as open as I think everybody thinks he was, but we'll figure that out when we watch it.
Well, bottom line is it shouldn't have gone where it went.
Yeah. With the Thielen bit, if you think, and I may be wrong here, I'm going to watch it back. If you think Cousins got sucked into a player undercutting a route with Jones, look at the guy trying to suck him into the Thielen pass.
Really?
It was the same thing. Kirk took the cheese. He just took the Limburger instead of the cheddar.
He was going to lose an arm either way.
You're the best. Thank you. Thank
all
you
right,
very
guys,
much.
See you.
PJ Fleck, coach of the Golden Gophers, joins 5 minutes from now. This is 9 to noon.
It's PA. Last night took a L, but tonight I bounce back. Weekdays 9 to noon on The Fan.
News du Nord.
News du Nord is brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino. It's poker and blackjack and table games, oh my, all year round. So get to canterburypark.com for all the details.
Number one.
We're just going to jump right into this. The Los Angeles Dodgers are headed to the World Series.
Martin's 23rd pitch, Bellinger, with a fly ball to right field. Cody Bellinger has just given the Dodgers a 4-3 lead.
That courtesy of Radio KLAC. Ah, damn it. I think I'm going to get screwed on this highlight here.
What happened?
Well, on-air production meeting, I was excited to play the...
Ayuk
is on fire.
Well, did they do it? I just wanted, when he scored last night.
Here's what happens.
Martin's 23rd pitch, Bellinger.
Well, that's the same highlight. Great job, Eric.
San Francisco!
That's it. He just says...
Touchdown! San Francisco!
KMBR, classic HOF Greg Papa, but they cut off the highlight, and the national site I use only has the Westwood one because it was in a prime time.
And what did you want?
Ayuk! Ayuk! Ayuk is on fire!
We don't need no Debo, let the nga burn!
Which, by the way, in terms of, like, man dying in the desert needs water to live. The Niners needed that win last night, and I thought they handled the Rams pretty well.
How excited was Edmund Robinson after the Falcons won yesterday?
Here's to you.
I mean, he got moved to the active roster on Saturday. You know, Zimmer drafted him. Zimmer cut him. Zimmer found him from Newberry.
Yeah.
Probably no hard feelings or anything, but he got his revenge on the other side of... Here's to you, Edmund Robinson. Zimmer loves you more than you could know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You didn't make the team, Edmund Robinson. Zimmer said that you had to go. Go, go, go. Go, go, go. Go.
And he did, and the Falcons went yesterday.
Here they're back.
Who also went yesterday? Those Tampa Bay Bucks. Here's Gene Dekaroff.
Here's the snap to Brady, a little low. Brady picks it up, looks upfield. He looks, he still looks, he looks. Passes toward the end zone. Caught ball, touchdown Tampa Bay. Great throw, Brady, and a remarkable catch by Tyler Johnson. The rookie has his first TD, and the Bucks add to the lead.
That courtesy of the Bucks Radio Network. We'll hear from head coach P.J. Fleck about less than an hour from now, around 11:40. We'll catch up with him as the Gophers take on Michigan this weekend.
Yep.
I did want to get your take on this. Mm-hmm. Doc Emrick has retired from play-by-play duties. Longtime NHLer. I found this gem from 2013 calling a wild Blackhawks playoff game.
Able to play it around behind for Cullen. Touched on to Bouchard.
It's overtime.
Locked on for Cullen. Turning there. Stanton. Coming by as Oduya. Launch. Score!
No Zucker. Zucker with the game winner, game three, I think, 2013. Wild still lost the series. Mm-hmm. But Doc Emrick, HOF of HOFs from the hockey play-by-play world, he announced his retirement. I think he's age 74 right now.
When those who do that, play-by-play, step away and somebody like Vin Scully says he was the whatever of his profession in your sport, like for Vin it would be, well, he was the Babe Ruth of baseball play-by-play. Mike Doc Emrick is the Wayne Gretzky of his profession.
Mm.
And to end it with that being an opinion, yet I'm going to go ahead and say it's fact because I've heard a lot. I mean, that's, I think, the greatest professional compliment somebody could give you.
I think it absolutely can. I will end on this. There's an NFL doubleheader tonight, which is actually going to be sweet. It's Bills and Chiefs at like 4 p.m.
Yeah, I can't wait.
So, hot takes at happy hour with Isaac, Chiefs and Bills.
I was so upset after the Vikings game yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it was a little chilly outside. So, sitting in the hot tub when it's a little chilly. Yeah, it's phenomenal. Normally, I'm in there with Senor Smiley and or the flight attendant for 15-20-ish.
And the cicadas are probably gone now, so it was a little quieter.
Might have been in there for an hour, and I didn't watch any of the Green Bay game heads, and I was excited for that game all week.
Yeah.
I mean, if our lot in life was just an inch better, I'd like to remind Packer fans that Marquez Valdez-Scantling and your left guard, Elgton Jenkins, had as many tackles as Za'Darius Smith. And that can't be good. But we can't do that because... they have one loss, and we have five.
Edmund Robinson played 8 snaps on defense and 14 on special teams yesterday against the Vikings. Holy cow. Is very happy.
Around the corner, the 9 to noon radio show will make you happy with P.J. Fleck, coach of the Golden Gophers, about 11:40. Much more before that.
Eric Nordquist on lead vocals for News du Nord, courtesy of Canterbury Park and CanterburyPark.com.
Come on.
And I'm Paul Allen.
Come on.
At FM 100.3.
The Fan.
Snap is back. Here comes pressure up the middle. He throws, and it is intercepted. DeAndre Houston Carson. Are you kidding me? 2 weeks in a row, he's come up with a big play.
Not enough time for Teddy. Highlight courtesy News Radio WBBM.
Lavelle.
How did young Teddy perform yesterday? I didn't see any of the game, and good morning.
He looked very capable.
You didn't say good morning.
I do when I watch in Steel.
I know.
But good morning to you, Paul. I hope all is well.
Image matters most. Just look at Twitter.
In your sphere of influence. Anyway, Teddy was okay. The Bears' defense has gotten better the last 3 weeks. They're getting more pressure on the quarterback. They're getting pressure with their front four.
Well, wait a second. How did Teddy look? I mean, found Teddy, brought him in out.
Let me finish, honey.
I'm sorry.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
no, you're right.
Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn started getting in Bridgewater's face a little bit and moving him off his spot.
Okay.
And that led to some incomplete passes, and he got sacked four times.
Yeah.
They tried to pick on the rookie, Jalen Johnson, and had some success. Got a PI call that led to the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the Bears defense did a pretty good job of corralling Teddy Bridgewater and held Mike Davis at 2.9 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Which it didn't seem like it because, like, Davis was gashing us, but there's a lot of plays we got stuff behind the line of scrimmage. But Teddy, it's just good to see him on the field playing, trying to make plays after what he's been through, after that terrible accident he had with the Vikings.
I miss him.
Ran for 2.5 yards per carry and won the football game. I mean, that now, you know, I know Super Special Nagy likes to throw and falls through it 39 times, looks from afar, I mean, 198, certainly didn't kill the game, doesn't look to be Mahomes-esque. How the hell did you win this game? That's about the looking box score chasing. About the only thing I can say is how in the hell did you win this game?
Defense played his ass off.
Okay,
they're giving up an average at 18 points a game, and the offense is finding enough to score more than that.
Yeah,
and that's why you're 5-1.
And that's your formula.
And I mean Max playing with a little more. Max playing with some more bite right now.
Yeah.
Eddie Jackson's playing his ass off in the secondary.
Roquan had 12 tackles.
Yeah, Roquan was very active.
Ooh.
Very active. So, and first play of the game, tip pass interception.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bears had the ball like at the 10.
Okay, so horseshoe up ass again, 2020. I got to go ahead.
Tip a pass, make a play.
Oh, no doubt.
That's a play being made.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Well, just, yeah, but when the Bears are hot and rolling, the horseshoe's up the butt because stuff goes your way like that. For instance, when you're stuck, decrepit, and diseased, like my team, we're down 20-0. Boom! Let's start the second half. What? Brandon Powell, you're going to try to be a hero? You're really going to bring it out? Knucklehead brings it out, drops it, bounces right between the 8 and the 5 of our rookie Dan Chisena, who would have picked it up and gotten into the end zone, and our super special 250 in the building would have waved their hands in the air like they just didn't care. But of course, Chisena can't hold it. It bounced off him because we don't have a horseshoe up our butts.
Oh, man. If you want to cheer up head coach Mike Zimmer and you want to just old school, like how he wants to win games.
Hey,
just,
you look at that Bears box score.
Not only that, but the first two possessions of the game. Defense has to take the field first. It's a run for a loss of 1 yard.
Yeah.
Then Teddy Bridgewater is sacked. That's loss of 8 yards.
Look at this.
Then Tayshaun Gibson intercepts Teddy.
Yep.
And then they go three plays, 7 yards, get the touchdown. That is a Mike Zimmer Vikings victory right there.
Yeah.
I hope he watches that game. Cheers up a little bit.
I'm not buying this. The Bears have the Mike Zimmer defense playing right now. I'm not going that far.
What do you mean?
Oh, because the Bears defense has always been good the last 3 years. It didn't have, now, last year it was a drop off from the year before.
Well, no, he's not talking about a Mike Zimmer defense. He's saying,
this is how our head coach wants to win games.
You. The way we are constructed is the way you won yesterday. And it's not about us. You know what it's about right now for just a hot tick is Sid Hartman.
And in the two decades plus you've worked at the Strib.
What a transition.
And Sid Hartman dying yesterday, early second half Vikings game.
That's correct.
Yeah, when we learned in the Vox box, I mean it was like between first and second down of a blowout, and it just overtook the whole thing. It was, you know, just so shocking to hear it, even though he's 100 years of age. But you know what, you and Sid over the course of a couple of decades, what was your relationship like?
It was hot and cold, hotter toward the end than at the beginning. It was probably a little cold.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sid's one of a kind because, during his heyday, you know, right before I got to the Star Tribune in like 98, mm-hmm. there wasn't a sports move made in this town that Sid didn't know about first.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had that was in his DNA
mm-hmm.
that he gets everything first.
Yeah.
So he would compete against his own coworkers.
But would he get it to share it?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No, but to share it with the public.
Yes.
He would.
Yeah.
So he would break stories, and he had better access than anybody.
Yes. Even at the expense of the beat writers, you know, of his own paper.
Yeah.
So that we had to deal with that a little bit. And then Sid didn't know who the hell I was. And I remember the first time I met Sid, I was interviewing for the job here, and I'm in a meeting room with the copy editors. And I guess they asked Sid to come and meet this guy. He's a candidate to become a Twins beat writer. And it was right after his book came out. I said, Sid Hartman, how you doing? I said, Sid, I understand you're giving away free autographed copies of your book. He was like, what? No free copies. Turned around and storms out of the room. So that's how I met Sid. You know?
Right.
So, but through the years, our relationship got a lot better. The sports show era, that was, I'll never forget the sports show era with Sid because he felt that since I covered baseball, I should only talk about baseball.
Right.
And when I started talking about the Wolves or the Vikings, he would get mad on there.
Yeah.
And I really wish that we could show, we really wish we had recordings of what went on during commercial breaks instead of the actual show.
Yeah.
Because there were times where Sid would just lay into people or, based on what I've heard, him and Dark Star would carry on whatever argument they had, you know, into the break.
Well, they almost fought several times. I mean, like Sid in his 80s. Dark and
yes,
whatever,
not backing down.
Yeah, I mean it. Their arguments at God rest the soul of both of them. Mm-hmm. And I was very close with Dark and close with Sid, as close as you could get. But nah, man, they off what you just said, it was nasty. Yeah. Sometimes.
So I mean, these last 10-12 years, you know, Sid come down in the press box and he'll come down in the first row and sit during games. We start talking.
Yeah,
ask the questions. Hey, you know, you do a pretty good job. You know, and he's like, so now he's starting to, you know. I got a little respect for him toward the end.
Yeah.
So, you know what? And, you know, Sid was a competitor. In this town, he was a colossus. I mean, the enormity of his success and enormity of his personality, you know, dominated the sports landscape here.
Yeah.
But he had a soft side here. He had a soft side, too. I mean, in 05 and 06, when I was having eye problems.
Yeah.
And I was going through my four retinal surgeries. You know, he called me out of the blue and said, hey, I'll hook you up with one of my doctors at the Mayo Clinic convenient. You just tell me. I'll get someone there. You get down on the Mayo.
Yeah.
And I got a guy for you. I said, Sid, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
The funny part is I ended up at Mayo. The last surgery was at Mayo. So, and I haven't had any problems since. So, but, you know, Sid did have that soft side that he would bring out once in a while. But he was, like I said, and he was a colossus in this town. That's the best way I can put it.
Would you, given how deeply rooted in Minnesota sports history Sid Hartman is, would you put him on a Minnesota sports Mount Rushmore with Bud Grant, Sid Hartman, and whomever else the other two are?
Who would the other two be?
I don't know. Kirby Puckett?
It might just be a two-man Mount Rushmore.
Now Kirby Puckett needs to be on there.
Okay.
Where's Joe Maurer at? He's one of the greatest athletes the state of Minnesota's produced.
Now Kirby means more than
but
Joe.
I mean,
no offense.
Bud is...
But who's third then? Who's fourth?
I don't know. But I'm saying, well, Kevin Garnett maybe? I don't know. I have no idea.
Maybe Garnett and Puckett.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have no idea. But I'm saying for sure, Grant, Puckett.
Herb Brooks?
Maybe. That's a great call. But I put Sid in that four.
Ooh, Herb.
I put Sid Hartman in that four.
1,000%.
Thank you.
I mean, he touched. I mean, Sid, you know, towards the end, I feel like in some ways, and it hurts, you know, it hurts to say it now that he's gone, but you almost kind of take him for granted over the last 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. And it was fun to see him at events, but clearly not the insider to the degree that you were referencing him earlier in his career. But he has literally touched every aspect of Minnesota sports longer than anybody else in the freaking state's been alive.
Yeah.
He is Minnesota sports. I mean, just through longevity, the connections, the things that he did with the Minneapolis Lakers, just his hand in every aspect of sports in this state is unmatched, truly is.
The sign, no media beyond this point, did not apply to Sid.
Right.
That's the one thing I learned really quickly in my first years in the Twins beat, because that small-ass clubhouse at the Metrodome, you can only go so far, and then you're in the trainer's room or the workout area, and Sid would routinely walk into the trainer's room trying to get people to talk to him, you know.
Well, when Al Michaels comes to town with Sunday Night Football, or Gary Kubiak accepts a job as an offensive coordinator, or Norv Turner, same thing, two-time Super Bowl champion. Big names, big equity, big history. The first thing they always say is, where's Sid?
Yeah.
When they're in their first press conference, the first thing they say is, where's Sid?
Yep.
Or Al Michaels, when he arrives, is, where's Sid?
That's it.
Okay, now to get to that, that's more than writing a column. That's immortality that cannot be replicated.
I got one for you. First year on the beat, the Twins are trying to trade Knobloch. So now we're talking about the winter of 97 into 98. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to trade Knobloch, and all this stuff's flying out in New York. I'm new here, and I'm getting my ass kicked. I'm just trying to get ahead.
Yeah.
So on a whim, I pick up the phone. I dial the Yankees. I ask for George Steinbrenner. The next thing you know, phone picks up. Steinbrenner. It was almost like Jerry Seinfeld. Steinbrenner here.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. I said, George Steinbrenner, this is Lavelle Neal with the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I work with Sid Hartman. He says, you just said the magic word. And he gave me an interview.
Yeah. There's so much that goes into that type of immortality.
Yep.
None higher, in my opinion, than trust. You know, for into the New Orleans game.
Okay.
Of the playoff game last year. Okay. Myself, Sid Hartman, and Bob Hagen were sitting in Mike Zimmer's office. And we were talking about the game. And, you know, the Zimmer did some things in that game that they hadn't done all year. That he, you know, we kind of knew was coming in that game. Okay, Sid too. A lot of new schoolers, and not you, okay, if they were privy to that information, the level of anxiety they would have, knowing they had something that nobody else had. But as the trust goes, to either get into the office or be respected, you can't breach it. But they would be so uptight and so twitchy because of worry that somebody else would put it out first, they couldn't control themselves. That is the separator with Sid.
Especially in today's Twitterverse.
He knows Childress is going to be fired. He knows Zimmer's going to be the coach. He knows Boudreaux's going to be fired. But he doesn't have to share it with the masses, because he was asked not to. Yet it gets you a quick start on shaping opinions and getting things formulated as the trust tree would go. And at the end of the equation for Sid Hartman, the work ethic is obvious. The equity is obvious. The trust is non-obvious. And that is what separates him from everybody. We'll be right back.
The Fan and Wixon Jewelers want to give you a shot to put a grand in your hand. It's the National Cash Contest, and every hour a new keyword. This hour, this keyword is love. Text love to 200-200. Text love to 200-200 right now. Text love to 200-200. The Fan and Wixon Jewelers might put a grand in your hand, win $1,000. Text love to 200-200. Text message and data rate. Hammer, don't play that, but play this. KFAN, along with Miller Lite, want to see how you celebrate Vikings game days? Post your Vikings game day setup on social media. Make it too legit to quit and tag KFAN1003 in it. Then use the hashtags KFANVikes and It's Miller Time in your post, because you can win a 55-inch smart TV and Miller Lite Vikings home gating gear. More info, KFAN.com, keyword contest.
losing the game, lame and insane. It's a shame I gotta do this, but I remain the same. Unchained, getting better, never known as a sweater. Keeping it at the top because I got myself together. So roll with a guy who's physical and fit, knows the time, and too legit to quit saying.
Say what? Who you like in the World Series, Atlanta or the Dodgers? The Dodgers or Tampa Bay?
Yeah, the Tampa Bay is going to say. I'm still going with the Dodgers, man. The roster, the depth of their roster finally came to life at the end of that series. Okay. They've had to grind out some close games. They're not hitting the ball the way they want to.
Yeah.
But that lineup's too damn deep. The arms, there's too much talent in that rotation. The one hiccup is Kenley Jansen in the ninth, because Kenley's not the Kenley of 5 years ago.
Okay.
But I still think they can eke out a short series against the Rays, but I'm not trying to discredit the Rays at all. It's a damn good team, and everybody in a bullpen comes out of the bullpen throwing 97. Even that includes three former Twins relievers, John Curtis and Nick Anderson, and Aaron Slager doesn't throw 97, but he's up to 94. But it could be another seven-game series. I think the Rays could throw. They're going to throw their best punch at the Dodgers, but I think the Dodgers win in seven.
Yeah, but definitely not greatest Dodgers team history of Dodgers, right?
Well, you're talking about an organization that had Drysdale and Koufax. You're talking about an organization that had Russell Lopes, Garvey, and Say,
and a pitcher named Oral.
Yeah, and an outfielder named Dusty. It's kind of hard to say this is the greatest Dodger team of all time. Yeah. But
and a first baseman named Garvey.
Exactly. Yeah. I said Russell Lopes, Garvey, and Say.
You did?
Yeah.
Right. And Yeager.
Steve Lake Yeager, the catcher.
Yeah.
And then after that, Mike Solskjaer.
Manny Mota. Let's go. Let's go back and forth. You beat me last time. Manny Mota.
Okay.
All-time Dodgers. Name game. Go.
I can't say Dusty Baker anymore, can I?
No, you're fine.
Ken Landreau.
Nice, the outfielder. Big play for the Angels, too. Very, very good. Rick Monday.
Mickey Hatcher.
Hickey Matcher. Oral Hershiser.
Steve Sachs.
Fernando Valenzuela.
Ooh, Hideo Nomo.
Don Sutton.
Ooh. Here's one for you.
Yeah.
Jose Offerman.
Mm-hmm, nice. Steve Sachs.
I said Steve Sachs. I win!
You bastard. You did not.
I did say Steve Sachs.
You stumped the snob as in the sports snob.
How can you get, like, what about Koufax? What about Kurt Gibson?
Them. We didn't say Gibson.
We didn't say Gibson.
Yeah. And Boog Powell.
Boog Powell?
Yeah.
Who is he with the Dodgers?
Boogaloo was his nickname.
Boog was with the Orioles.
I know he was.
I don't want to mess with you with Orioles. I think you crushed me in Orioles the last time we played this one.
Think? Let's do White Sox. Ron Karkovice. No, I'll lose. I'll get killed.
Although I like he started with Karkovice.
Wilbur Wood.
You know, no,
I'll get killed.
When I was a kid playing softball in the South Side of Chicago, I pretended I was Greg Luzinski. So that touches a soft spot in my heart when you brought him up.
Sorry about yesterday, by the way.
In what way?
I mean, considering the way the previous game went, I mean, it does behoove us to say, man, great effort. Sorry about yesterday.
What sport are you talking about?
The Texans, Romeo Lavelle.
Oh. I always love that.
Played the undefeated Titans right down to the wire, ballots in the river, Jefferson over there, and you almost won the game.
Well, they were leading, and then all of a sudden Derrick Henry said, I am the best running back in football, y'all.
How about that?
And just did them.
How about that?
That was a crusher.
So, Snell, Morton, Snell, are we going to do that out of the gate? Charlie Morton, though.
Morton started game 7, so I don't think he's going to be ready for game 1. So, it may be Bub. Tyler Glasnow, maybe, into Blake Snell.
Yeah, Glasnow was diseased last time, but who cares?
Yeah, you know what, though? The arm is legitimate, though.
If you look at Morton's postseason or like, big spot game log in this day and age of Major League Baseball, he's perfect. You know why? Because he gives you 5 to 6 and fly of the 5 and fly of the same game every time.
What's crazy is that there's rumblings that the Rays are not going to pick up his option. Like, I think he has a $15 million option for next year.
Whoa.
But Martin's like 35 years old, too, so he may decide to shut it down.
I'd give him $23 million a year to pitch here.
How many years?
How badly did we get beat if we chased him? Like, previously, didn't we chase Charlie Morton?
Yes.
Leaving Houston?
Yes.
Okay. How hard did we chase? And, did we get beat at the wire or what?
I don't know if it was the wire, but maybe come when they were spinning out at a turn, maybe the racehorse started pulling away.
Okay,
but Twins made a pitch. Rocco made a big recruiting call to Charlie Morton.
Anytime you get outbid by that money making machine known as the Tampa Bay Rays, I mean, yeah, I can completely understand that.
Well, hey, you know, Nelson Cruz picked the Twins over the Rays when he signed with the Twins.
Yeah, because he wanted to play in front of people.
Hey, oh boy, that's a shot.
Well, seriously, Tampa Bay Rays, their TV deal has to be worse than ours. And from what I understand, the way you lay it out over the years, that TV deal situation is so important to like the totality of the organization. Yeah. And we're like near the bottom. They got to be below us, and we kill them in attendance.
You know what? The Tampa Bay works with what it has to work with. For years, they've had a policy about signing pitchers to ridiculously high contracts. They let David Price walk. They let they traded James Shields. You know, once they got too expensive to keep
David Price.
They're going to do with this squad too. On the other hand, though, they're drafting and they're scouting of other teams' players. They have fleeced teams in some of these deals. This Chris Archer to Pittsburgh for Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows.
That was unbelievable.
That's just robbery.
That was just unbelievable. Hey, you guys are 5-1, and we're happy for you. You think you can beat the Sultan of Smugs team?
Don't know, because the Bears are going to put it together for four quarters. Yeah. And actually, yesterday was probably, defensively, they brought it for four quarters. Yeah. Offensively, they kind of were in and out a little bit. Foles had an absolutely awful interception, but I'll tell you this, Paul. The receivers, they have responded to Foles. They know they got a shot to get the ball.
Yeah.
They can make plays now.
When you outscored Atlanta 20-0 in the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. what did that look and feel like? Was Atlanta completely diseased?
Yeah, they did look totally diseased.
Yeah.
But they contributed to their own demise, Paul, because they kept trying to throw the ball in the fourth quarter when they should have been running clock.
That's what they were doing against us.
Yeah.
And we couldn't take the cheese.
Exactly. And the Bears got the ball back, and Foles was on fire right away, and they came back and scored. Mm-hmm. Next possession. You know, Ryan's dropping back to pass the first down. I'm like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
If I'm Atlanta, I'm running the ball here.
Yeah.
So they made their own bed in that regard.
Right.
So next 3 weeks are interesting. We're at Rams for Monday Night Football.
Okay.
They were home against Saints. They were at Titans. Then after that?
That's three losses in a row.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, you're going to be 5-4.
Then
you're going to be two games ahead of us after we rattle off three in a row.
Then after that, we have five division games plus Jacksonville and Houston.
Ew.
So there's a path to 10 here if we can win one of these next three games.
Nordo, do we believe Houston can beat the Sultan of Smugs team? Because,
No.
We saw Houston, and then they got the Romeo Lavelle bump.
Yeah.
And then I took them plus 3.5 this week, and I'm like, yeah. I mean, there's a bump to what's happening here with them, but Tennessee's on a short week. They lost by 6.
Yeah.
Scored a bunch of points and stuff like that. I think it's Green Bay at Dijon. You get the right. You have earned the right to make the prediction because of your Feast 5 first place standing.
Man, I went 1-3 yesterday, but I'm happy.
Doesn't matter.
I'm happy to take it.
Still got a winning record. You'd still be on the plus side of the ledger, I believe.
That is true, yes.
I believe it's Green Bay minus 2, 3, 3.5.
They're only 3.5-point favorites in Houston?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, well, I would bet no less than $250 on the Packers to win that game.
I'm not big on talking numbers because it's all relative. Like if I bet $1,000, that's a lot for me, but for the real Paul Allen, it's nothing.
Yeah, and you know I'm not betting $250.
Right, I'm asking for level of confidence in who somebody likes.
Well, for me, since I wouldn't bet $250 on a game, and I'm saying that, my confidence is as high as ever that the Packers, after what happened to them in Tampa, will come back and smoke.
Green Bay minus
three. And that game flipped into two interceptions in the first half by Rodgers.
Turnovers change games.
He tried to fit balls in the tiny windows, and a couple passes got deflected and went the wrong way.
Hey, I got PJ Fleck next. Appreciate you, bud.
I thought Fleck was before me.
No.
You always come first.
You precede the right hand of PJ Fleck.
Okay.
Thank you, bud. I'll see you next week.
My pleasure.
Lavelle Neal III, Star Tribune, StarTribune.com, Golden Gophers football coach, PJ Fleck, courtesy of Wicks and Jewelers. Join 9 to noon each and every week. Download it now.
I can't wait until tomorrow. 'Cause tomorrow might very well be too late.
Weekly 9 to noon, head coach P.J. Fleck, proudly presented by Wixon Jewelers.
P.J., Paul Allen, how you been?
I'm doing elite, Paul. How about you?
Pretty well, thank you. P.J. Fleck, coach of the Golden Gophers football team, weekly 9 to noon on Mondays, like last year. And in this final segment of the radio show, we hook Michigan this Saturday, nationally televised. Listen to the game on The Fan. But first, the local sports A topic is the death of the iconic Sid Hartman. P.J., what did Sid mean to you?
Oh, he was such a, he was a close friend. You know, it's really hard to be friends with probably a lot of media members who really judge you for your wins and losses and, you know, write about you daily and constantly. And, you know, but Sid was the, one of the first people I ever met here. And I still remember how professional he always was with me, but he became a friend. And he was one of my biggest supporters and one of the Gophers' biggest supporters and one of our players' biggest supporters. And he wanted to see Gopher football be so successful. We're talking about a guy who covered Gopher football for 75 years. He loved what he did. He never worked a day in his life. I mean, he worked all the way up until his passing. We used him as an example last night. One, because we were talking about the March on Washington with A. Philip Randolph in 1963, and Sid being older than I was, I am right now in 1963. But we were talking about finding something that you love to do, and you never have to work a day in your life. And Sid Hartman's a great example to all of our players to find something that you love that you can do all the rest of your life and don't have to worry about, you know, wanting to hurry up and have it end. And Sid experienced life. He enjoyed life. He was an incredible friend, and like I said earlier, to know him was to love him, and I'm really going to miss him.
Brilliantly and eloquently laid out. Thank you very much. And before I get into the 2020 squad, if you don't mind me asking, with that March on Washington, which I've read up on a lot too over the years, what when you say we were talking about that, was it like you and the team, and or like what triggered that conversation?
Yeah, our players have been absolutely incredible, especially during the time of COVID, but also racial injustice and going through that with what we're going through in our country. Our players have had their voices heard, and there's a lot of action that we're taking place. I think, you know, you've got to be able to do three things to be able to change that way is one, you got to be able to listen. Two, you got to have empathy. And then the third one, which is the hardest for people, is the action. Our players have come up with what we call the HEAR initiative, and that stands for helping to end racism through education. And so here, because George Floyd happened here, A-R-E, the word E-R-E means end, was before. And so putting this logo together says here, this is our way of creating action. So every month we have a speaker come in and teach us about racism, teach us about education. What does it look like? Racism education, where does it come from? What are certain events in American history where maybe the perception of what we learned in the textbooks was one thing, but there's also so many other things that we passed over. And we talked last night, Dr. William Jones, who's a professor here, came in and talked to our team about the March on Washington back in 1963 and talked a little bit more, not just about Martin Luther King, but talked about the initiative of that movement of A. Philip Randolph and who he was and how long coming this March on Washington was from back in FDR 1941 and so on and so forth. So, but we are doing everything we can to help educate Generation Z so that as they have their own children, they can be able to take that blank slate, keep it a blank slate, and truly teach love, hope, togetherness, congruency, and get some type of what we all dream of having.
And what I love about that, PJ, is, you know, with when everything was as hot as it was, and it's hot. It's, you know, social injustice and equality and everything. It's there if whenever you want it to be there, because there are still things that need to dramatically be fixed. But I mean, even if the action is not right away, for instance, like, you know, when a lot of things were transpiring with George Floyd and whatever, you a lot of famous people would jump out there socially so everybody could see and hear what they had to say. And my next step would be, okay, you're right, and I understand that, but where are you going to be in a week? Where are you going to be in a month? Where are you going to be in a year? And that's very important to me, you know, where the way you laid that out about the action, it's even if there's no action immediately by any of these kids, you or anybody, having those conversations and opening minds so that people can see the forest for the trees, that's just chipping away at that big rock, turning it into little rocks. And that's how I see it, man. Do you see it that way? Because I love how you laid that out.
Well, I think there's extremes, right? There's always going to be an extreme on one side or another. And what has happened in our society is going to create the extreme end to be angrier. Well, if that's what we focus on, we'll never get to where we need to be. It's starting in the middle and working out to those extremes. And how do you do that? You do that through education. You do that through empathy. You do that through making sure everybody knows how and where and why we got to where we are. And knowing people's past. And, you know, Seth Green said it very clear to me the other day. This was when right after George Floyd. And he goes, Coach, let me ask you a question. He goes, how many African-American teachers have you ever had? And it made a lot of sense to me. And I said, you know what? That one stung.
Wow.
That one got to me of, okay, I have to do something. I have to do something to help these players through education, to help this football team, the next generation of society. Make sure that these men, and I can only control my football team, but these men have education where whatever decisions they make the right decisions for humanity. And they also make sure that the kids they raise, the children they raise, can have the life that we all dream of having together. And but again, if we're focusing on just the extremes and the extremes are getting the attention,
yeah,
we need to find a way to be able to make sure that the education gets the attention to be able to drown that out.
ESPN's College Game Day is here Saturday, nationally televised on ABC against a blue blood. You guys have earned this. How excited is everybody for Saturday night?
Well, everybody's really excited. I mean, this is the fifth time in College Game Day's history that they've been to back-to-back places for home games. I mean, that just shows how far we've come. You know, 3 years ago, College Game Day never came to the Twin City area. Here we are with a one-year time frame of them coming twice. Really, when you look at it, you're talking about a 7-8 month span. That says a lot about our program. It says a lot about where our program's headed, how our brand is looked at nationally, the type of games we're playing in now. And again, that doesn't promise you anything, but it shows where you are, and it shows where you constantly have to continue to evolve to go to. We'll never arrive. We'll never feel like we've arrived. We're constantly going to have that crack on our shoulder that we need to prove to ourselves we are who we say we are. It's a wonderful opportunity for the state of Minnesota, the Twin City area, who's had a very hard last 6 months. It's a way for people to be able to come together. Game Day brings people together. It brings people together on TV. It brings people together in that particular city or town that they come to. It brings hope. It brings excitement. And I think it's exactly what the Twin City area deserves and needs right now. And I'm very thankful for College Game Day coming here. I know we all are. And we're really looking forward to the game on Saturday.
PJ, has college so far been like the NFL, the pros, in that offenses are way ahead of defenses?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell because, you know, when you watch college football right now, I mean, we haven't had spring football. We haven't had time with them. We've had Zoom meetings. You know, we're talking about non-professionals. We're talking about student athletes. And then you get them together and you're only allowed a certain amount of hours. You know, there's a reason why, TA, we prepare from January all the way through, you know, August and then on through the season is because this game is very difficult. There's so many moving parts. It's the ultimate team game. There's so much detail, fundamental strategy that needs that amount of time. And when you don't have that, there's certain things you have to pick and choose, and there's certain things that get attention and certain things that don't get attention instead of all of it. So I think you're starting to see that. There's inconsistency in football, and then there's some that are consistent. But we've taken the model of we got to find a way to do it better for longer, and if we can find a way to do the preparation better for longer, we're going to have the best chance we can possibly have. Nothing's guaranteed. Nothing's promised, especially in a COVID world where you could have a Friday night and a kid's out 3 weeks. You could have a kid prepare all week in that spot, and next thing you know, you got a scout team member starting in that spot, where usually you don't have that. You know what your depth chart looks like going into that game based on injuries. This throws a completely different loophole in there. But again, everybody has to deal with it. So some people are going to handle it better than others. Some people have maybe some advantages than others, but it is what it is. And you have to find a way to be able to take the challenges head on and still go out there and be the best team you can be.
PJ, what do you think of Michigan quarterback Joe Milton?
You know, I think he's kind of that once-a-decade type player that comes along. from the skill set. He's tall, he's strong, he's big, he can run. There's only about 11 clips of him from last year, so we went to recruiting film on him. But you can tell the entire state of Michigan's really excited about this young man, rightfully so, because of his skill set. I don't know much about him as a person, things like that, or leadership skills. I don't know anything about that yet, but I do know he's at Michigan. He's getting a lot of positive talk around his game. And Michigan's a Michigan. You know, they got 44 4-stars, two 5-stars. They're always going to have skill. They're always going to have talent. And we just have to find a way to be the best team on Saturday. And they're very, very talented, though.
Last one, 35 seconds, you get it all. Mike Sanford Jr., your new offensive coordinator. Tell us about him.
Well, you know what? I think Matt Simon and Mike Sanford have worked really good together this year. It's been a challenging time when you have a new coordinator, but that's what's fun about it. There's been new wrinkles added to our offense. There's more added. There's some taken out. We've evolved. We've made it better. And I think having two guys have more input has been really good for us. I think our room, you know, Brian Callahan, Kenny Burns, Clay Patterson, having more input has been really good for us. So, you know, you want to make sure that it's better than what it was, but what we want to do is make sure we're better today than we were yesterday and that we can continue to evolve as we go forward.
Tyler Johnson.
It's very different than last year. It's very different. It's a different fingerprint than last year. We had 5 draft picks last year, the most in the program history. Just a different year. It doesn't mean you can't have the same success, just a different year, different way to win, different character on the team, different coaches. So it's going to be a lot of fun, though, PA.
Tyler Johnson got his first touchdown yesterday. That's pretty cool.
Oh, I tell you what, it's really cool. You know what's really fun, PA, is what? To watch two guys on the game of the week in the NFL that two of the 22 guys that are starters on that field or on that field at one time are Gophers. And not only that, watching a guy like Tyler get his first touchdown, he got his first start last week. Not only that, watching Antoine Winfield Jr. play the way he plays, with a smile on his face and loving football, there's a lesson to be learned from that from all the young football players out there. He was hurt for 2 years. And everybody always says, why me? Why me? When we go through injuries or surgery. He never did that. He said, it's football. It happens. I'll come back better than I was. And here's a guy playing the game the right way, like a missile, and loving it and smiling and enjoying the game and not being afraid to make a mistake. That's what it's all about. He is so refreshing, and that's what I miss about him being here is that daily refreshing smile of having him play the right way, and there's so much we can all learn from him, watching him, you know, being out 2 years in college and still doing what he's doing. Not only that, probably going to be the defensive rookie of the year. We can all learn a lot from him.
Good luck against that blue blood, and I'll call you next week. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Row the boat, Sky Mogul Gophers.
See you, bud. Yeah, he used to say, row the boat, Sky Imago Gophers, and Skol Vikes. When you're 1-5, they forget the Skol Vikes.
Yeah, no need for a Skol this week.
Yeah, when you got Antoine, why wasn't it a Skol box? I mean, you got Winfield and Johnson down there. 3-2-1. Thanks for calling.
Fire the cannons!
Fire the cannons, Sky Yuma, and Skol box, Skol Knolls. Great job today. See you tomorrow.
See ya.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Paul Allen. Faith over fear, please. Bye.
If it's good news or money, leave a message.
Podcast Today's Paul Allen Show. Or listen back to previous show and interviews by going to the iHeartRadio app or KS.